When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Coming up on episode 261 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the single motor Polestar 2, the Toyota Corolla Cross, the Acura Integra, the F-150 Raptor, the Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe, more impressions of the Dodge Charger Daytona SRT, a wrap-up of Monterey Car Week, bad touchscreens, Lamborghini not being able to rely on power alone, and more. All that coming up next.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia.
This is episode 261 of Wheel Bearings, and we've got the whole crew back together again. I'm Sam Abual Samad from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Nicole Wicklin from the Fast Women podcast.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from, oh man, I can't think of a place. Let's say Engadget.
Somewhere out there.
All right. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. I'm ready this time.
All right. Go first.
Not often I can say that. I have had two vehicles because we had the week we skipped, so I have two vehicles. I'm going to do the one that I had longer ago, which my memory is not as good as. So ask me fewer questions about this one, Sam. This is the Ford F-150 Raptor.
Oh, I got lots of questions about this one.
Dang it. So I had the Raptor, which is always a hoot to drive, especially when the place that you have to drive it most is downtown Boston. Let me tell you, that was a thing. If you ever wonder if this feels big, find your nearest big city and attempt to drive it, and you will feel like you're going to take out every lamppost, every curb, everything. Like, it's so big in a city. It is not made for cities, which truly it isn't, but I have the proof. So the Raptor is their off-road racing. You're a badass, and you go out there, and you go crashing over the dunes, and you're going to do stuff no one else is going to do.
And most of them just get driven around cities.
Yeah,
exactly.
You hope you're going to do one day.
Right,
eventually.
You aspire to be that guy.
Yes.
So if you aspire to be that guy, this truck will actually do all that. I mean, it is capable as heck. If you are someone who's going to do that, it's one of those vehicles that the capability that this has is far beyond even what most of the folks who will really go out there and drive it in the dirt are going to do with it. What it can do, it almost needs like the hands of a professional to really put it to its limits. Everybody else, if you want to go out there and you want to drive in the dirt, you want to go really fast, cool. This truck has got you covered. You
cool.
can do it. As fast as you can probably drive and manage, this truck can manage you. It has a 3.5-liter EcoBoost V6, 10-speed automatic transmission. There's standard all-wheel drive. It has all these extra bits and pieces to make it off-road worthy so that you can... You don't have to worry that if you get some air and you come down, you're going to damage your suspension. You're not. Just going to go boop, boop, and keep on going and be perfectly happy. The neat thing about this, though, as much as it was cumbersome, to say the least, driving it in a big city, it is hard to drive it in a city. But driving on the highway, a lot of vehicles that are really off-road focused, once you take them on the highway, they're miserable because the tire noise and the bounce that you have, every little tiny pothole you go over, every little crack in the pavement, you don't just go over it, you sort of bounce over it because the suspension system is just not made to be managing smooth roads with little bumps. It kind of wants to treat everything like you have gone off a jump and you're like, no, it's just the city streets.
And the previous gen Raptor was really like that. And yeah, it had a lot of that soft floatiness. And I really didn't like driving that one on the road.
Yeah, on road, it's hard. Like you think, oh, that's not really going to matter. Yeah, take that thing for a 1 hour drive on the highway or on a side road where you feel like it's constantly bouncing so much that it forces you to keep more attention and keep more control of the steering wheel. Over long distances, that gets really that gets wearying. You get tired of that. The nice thing about this is I drove it back and forth to Boston, I think like 3 or 4 times because it was just what I had to do this week. It was really nice on highways. It was nice in even like either going high speeds in highway traffic, changing lanes. We drive really super aggressively in Boston. You don't just change lanes. You change lanes. So this quick left-right thing, it stayed planted. You didn't feel that overly sway kind of back and forth motion that makes you think like, whoa, I really have to work to keep control. And just, it was surprisingly quiet even. Like you hear the rumble of that engine. There is no doubt you have a powerful engine under the hood. But it's never this annoying thing where you think, I couldn't drive this for 5 hours. You could totally take this on a road trip that was just a pavement road trip. The drawback to that would be that you would go broke putting gas in it. It gets 15 city, 16 highway.
Ooh,
yeah.
That's a spread.
So it's kind of, I know, it's a really big spread, you know, huge spread, 15 to 16. So the fuel economy isn't great. It's not great. But
well, I mean, if you bought that vehicle.
Yes, exactly.
Well, you
exactly.
Weren't, yeah.
It's like you're probably not sitting there going, Prius or Raptor? Prius or Raptor? No, if you're the person looking for a Prius, this isn't even on your radar. If you want fuel economy, you're not even looking at this. You saw this and went, no, thank you, and then just kept on walking. And there are F-150s. Like, get yourself a Lightning or something if one someday. You know, get one of the other powertrains. This is not that one. This is for the person who wants to be able to do some serious off-road driving. Or honestly, and it sounds so stupid to say, because so many people, you buy a car, there's capability you may or may not ever use, but you want your car to look cool, whatever cool is for you, whether cool is a sleek little sedan, whether cool is an SUV, whether cool is a truck. If you want a truck that looks cool in the truck world, this will do it. I mean, it looks amazing. So I there are drawbacks to the Raptor, but I love it because it does exactly what it's supposed to do. It is as built.
Okay.
Is that fair?
That is perfectly fair. And, you know, I mean, that's really all you can expect out of a vehicle is that, you know, whatever it was designed to do, that it executes on that mission, mm-hmm. whatever that mission might be. Right. And, you know, the job of a Raptor, of an F-150 Raptor is to, you know, be able to do all that off-road stuff and, you know, and still be reasonable to drive on the road when you're in between your off-road missions. So, you know, if it does that, well, great.
Exactly. So, you know, for that reason, I like it. If that's not what you're looking for, then look at another F-150.
If you live in downtown Boston.
Yeah, probably maybe, if you're mostly driving downtown Boston, maybe no.
But you got, I mean, you do have enough sidewall on those tires that, you know, it will survive most Boston potholes. So there's that.
That's just
most,
size.
I'd say like 75% of Boston potholes will not actually swallow the tire, but there are that 25% that could potentially swallow the whole truck.
Going on in Boston.
But, you know, we have the worst roads in Boston. They are horrific. Oh. They're awful. And as soon as some are good, it's like, oh, they paved this road. Oh, God, what's happened on this other one? Like, they've ripped something else apart, you know?
So have you driven the Ram TRX?
Yes.
What would you choose, the Ram TRX or the Raptor?
Gosh, dang it. These are always so hard.
Which one rides better?
The TRX.
Yeah,
when it comes to, I know, right? When it comes to ride quality and also just the interior. Now, the interior of the Raptor is really nice. I mean, it doesn't feel like a work truck at all. It's beautiful. It has all these Raptor-y hints and it's quality materials and it's visually appealing and it's comfortable. But I feel like I just right now still feel like Ram, even though when did they first introduce Ram? It's the newest generation. It's been a little bit now.
2018?
Yeah. So I still feel like they're ahead of the competition on interior quality and ride quality. I don't think anyone's quite gotten to where they are. I mean, they're going to have to up their game next generation for sure. But I feel like everyone else is still trying to creep up to what the bar that Ram set. So if you made me pick between Raptor and TRX, I would pick TRX.
Yeah, I think the only full size pickup I think that matches where Ram is, at least in terms of ride quality, not mm-hmm. necessarily interior, is the Lightning. You know, the Lightning, you know, I think matches and maybe even goes past the Ram on ride quality.
Yeah, but you're right. The Lightning is the exception, but that's, you're also, it's like a very, like, I, if it was just overall, yes, that was the nicest ride quality, but you're, it's also that EV thing. Like if Ram had an EV right now, I wonder if that would still be the case. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so it's a hard comparison, but you're totally right, Sam. The Lightning has the smoothest, most like refined ride of the lot.
It just goes.
And of course, goes.
There's
you know,
no slipping. There's no nothing. It just feels so planted.
And a Lightning is not going to go a lot of the places where you can go with a TRX or a Raptor.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, you're not going to, don't go jump in your Lightning.
Ground clearance.
Yeah, you're not going to, you're going to jump things and you'll go break your truck. Don't do that.
Yeah. Don't go jump in your Lightning.
Jumping your Lightning. Don't get the Lightning, get the Raptor instead if that's what you're, that's what you want to do on the weekends.
Don't go breaking my heart.
Don't go breaking my truck.
All right. What was the other one you had?
The other one, which is still in my driveway right this minute, is the 2022 Jeep Grand Cherokee Overland 4xe. Which I just love that this is like a small dissertation just saying the name of this vehicle.
It takes a long time. It's like a Porsche. Okay. It's like the Panamera hybrid e-turbo Panamera.
Right? It's like the entire top of this piece of paper is just the name of this vehicle, right? So this is the plug-in hybrid. It has an all-electric range of 25 miles, and it gets... The MPGE, the combined gas and electric, is 56 miles per gallon, so a little tiny bit better than the 15 of the Raptor. and it, you know, it's the Grand Cherokee is actually a really beautiful vehicle. I mean, they have it's. I'm driving the. Oops, as I smacked the mic, I'm driving the Overland. So you have like a leather interior. You've got plenty of room. It has all the bells and whistles in there. The one I have has the Macintosh audio system, which I think has like. It's a million speakers to it. I've lost the number of speakers.
18 million speakers.
18 million speakers. Got Macintosh audio. It has the extra infotainment screen. I think they call it a passenger interactive display or something. But there's one that's just for the front passenger that you totally cannot see if you're the driver. So there's no temptation to be like, what are they doing over there? So that's always kind of neat and makes it. It makes this feel truly like a luxury vehicle. You get these little things that you don't find in just any car. You know, that screen, that's cool to have the passenger side screen.
Did you have Russ evaluate that for you?
Oh, yeah. He's. We've had other Jeeps that have this. Cause I think like the Grand Wagoneer or Wagoneer, one of them has it on one of the trims. He played around with that. It was funny because I love my husband, but when he's chatty, it was like, well, now it's just like having rare entertainment for the kids. Go play with that screen, honey. Shh. And he was like playing with everything, going through everything. Oh, this works. That works. I like this. I don't like that. Overall, he gave it a thumbs up. He liked it. He thought it was neat. He would have liked to have access to more of the functions. Because it doesn't have everything that the infotainment screen has. He wanted everything.
Yeah, limited, yeah.
Yeah,
You have no idea what's going on. You're like, is that wing working? Like, when I had it, I was like, is that thing working? I don't even know. And they're like, yeah, I can see stuff.
You,
I'm like,
you
what's
really,
going on? What's happening?
You can't see it. And to see it, like, when we were parked, I leaned over once. I'm like, how far does the driver have to, like, peer over into the passenger side? I literally had my head like practically right next to his head before I could even see it. So there's no way as the driver. Yeah, which is good. There's no way unless you're practically sitting in the passenger's lap that you can see this when you're the driver. You can't do it, which is exactly how it should be because you shouldn't be distracted by that stuff. This is as equipped the way that I had it, and it had like the extra stuff. There's like that interactive display is like $1,000. There's an advanced tech group that was on mine. That's another $2,000. I got fancy paint and a luxury, another tech group. So altogether, we're looking at a $75,000 car. So it's not cheap. But what I will say is it felt like a $75,000 car. It has that luxury vibe inside, the quality of the materials, the style of it. It's nice to drive. You know, you have all the capability that you'd expect in a Jeep. Still not Raptor level. Again, if you want that, don't go jump in your Jeep. Can't do that in the Grand Cherokee. Go get a Raptor. Or go get a TRX. I'll stay on brand for them. but it's if you're looking for that roomy, upscale vehicle for your family and you don't want like just enough room for everybody, you want plenty of room for everybody and plenty of room for cargo and that little extra efficiency of having the plug-in powertrain, You know, it's so fun. It gets kind of fun to plug in a car. Like we don't, I wasn't driving enough to use all the EV range and all of the gas range in this car this week. But yet I come home and my husband has plugged it in because we have the plug for our car. I'm like, why did you plug it in? We don't need to. He's like, it's just fun. I want to charge them both. I want two fully charged vehicles in my driveway.
It's just like you plug in your phone, you plug in your watch, you plug in, it becomes part of like, oh, that's the thing that has to happen.
Exactly.
Part of your routine.
Yeah, he's like, I can plug in my mind cell charge. I'm going to plug in yours and charge yours up. So so that's nice. And I like how it drives. I like how it handles. I don't really have issues with it. I think the biggest issue is, you know, this does go definitely into luxury pricing. $75,000 is not a cheap vehicle. And even if you off some of these packages, you're still looking in the 60s, which, again, still not a cheap vehicle.
Okay,
Land Rover is the Range Rover of America. Stop. Jeep is the
I'm like
I do this podcast very early in my time period.
Yes, it is. He's drinking Red Bull, folks.
I'm drinking Red Bull and tea. Jeep is the Land Rover of America. There we go.
Yes. Accurate. Well, now you said it right.
That was
good job.
Way too difficult to say.
Good job.
And you know, this at least of what's available in the market right now, the vehicle that is probably the closest direct competitor to this is actually the Rivian R1S, the SUV. Have you driven the R1S or the you've driven the pickup?
I drove the pickup. I have not driven the SUV.
Yeah, I've driven the pickup, not the SUV.
Yeah, I mean it's the same thing except you know with the longer roof.
Longer, basically. Right.
Yeah.
So what based on your experience of the Rivian?
Yeah.
How would you compare that against the Jeep? Because price wise, the Rivian's a little more expensive.
Okay.
I think you're looking for the R1S. You know, I think they start around 87.
Okay.
And it's all electric.
Right.
But you know, it's very clearly in that premium. Very off-road capable.
If you were to take out one's fully electric and one's like partly electric, let's even that out and say that's not part of the equation. If it's just like sort of looking at the vehicle itself, otherwise, the Rivian has this more of a streamlined, less traditional interior. It's very elegant. It's very nice, but it's very so clean. It's almost utilitarian in some ways. You know, it's very Spartan interior, although it's very nice. I feel like the Jeep, high-end Jeeps overall, give you more of a traditional, like, I have the fancy, contrast stitching and quilt. You know, everything feels more, I think, what most people expect of a luxury car. I think for some people, you sit down in a Rivian or some of the new EVs that have this very future forward kind of look that almost makes them feel Spartan. Like, wait a minute, I'm not getting a real luxury car here. There's not enough in here to make it look like luxury, not in a flashy way, just in a certain level of adornment that it doesn't have. It's not as bedazzled. It's not as bedazzled as other
not
vehicles.
As blingy.
It's not as blingy as Jeep or any of the other cars that get into that, SUVs that get into that price point. So I think for that, for me personally, I prefer the look of the Jeep because I prefer that more traditional look. But if you're ready to move towards something that looks a little bit, more stream, a little more Star Trek,
the Rivian almost feels kind of Swedish in a way because you do get, it's very, leather and real wood, but it's more restrained.
It's absolutely a luxury interior, and if the materials are top notch, but it's a very different type of luxury interior. And I like something about the interior of the Jeeps. I just like them. I just prefer.
You feel more coddled.
Yeah, something about it. Like when there's, I don't want it to be like over the top flashy and chrome and garbage everywhere. I don't need that. But I just feel like I want to sit down in a car that's a luxury car, or at least that even if they don't consider themselves a luxury car, at a luxury price point.
Oh, this is luxury.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Jeep is definitely moving into luxury. Yeah.
Right. But I mean, like Jeep, I don't think overall you'd say it's a luxury brand because a Wrangler isn't exactly a luxury. Do you know what I mean? Like they're not like all in with everything we build is luxury, although certainly they're pushing that direction. But I feel like I want to sit down in a car that's a luxury price tag and feel like it's like, yeah, this is good. This is a little cushy. This is a little fancy. I got cool. And I don't get that sense from a Rivian.
I think Jeep is more I think the Jeep is more like Patagonia, while the Rivian is more REI. Like the Rivian is more people driving a Rivian are more often like they're buying it because they're like, I can go surfing, I can stick snowboards, and the Jeep is like, well, I can take my kids to lacrosse.
Yeah, Yes.
Yeah.
And I can traverse, you know, the great Northwest, or, you know, the great Northeast in the snow and the rain and be coddled while doing this.
I will accept.
The Rivian people probably own like at least three pairs of Crocs.
I would accept that I am more Patagonia than REI. I can live with that assessment. That's okay, Robbie.
Okay. So one more question before we move on.
Okay.
You and Russ own a Wrangler 4xE.
Yes.
If you were buying today instead of 12 months ago, would you still go for the Wrangler or the Grand Cherokee? Because you get the same powertrain.
Okay, yeah. And we bought a Rubicon because honestly, I don't think the price point aside, like we're not considering the difference in price. Although I don't know how much of a difference there honestly is. But what I'm trying to remember.
It's in the upper 60s for the Wrangler Rubicon.
Yeah, it's still not. It still wasn't. Yeah. So, okay.
Oh,
my husband really, 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 really wanted a Wrangler. So okay. I think with both of these sitting in the driveway, he'd pick a Wrangler just because he had that, I want a Wrangler. He wanted a Wrangler. But if I had and I also, my kids are both in college, right? So this is a car for a family. You know, who needs this much space if you don't have a family, like kids you're putting in the back, or you're not always having something, but you don't need something this big. If I did have kids that were at home, if I did have, this would be a compelling choice because it offers more room, more comfort, and a quieter ride than the Wrangler does. So if you're looking for that, I would go for the Grand Cherokee. If you don't need all that and you're looking for a little bit more, also you can't open the roof. Seriously, you can't open the roof.
You can keep your husband quiet with that other screen.
There is the husband. I'm going to call, you know, there's rear seat entertainment.
It's
I'm going to call it husband entertainment system up in the front. That's on that side. I mean, you can't get that in a Wrangler. So, but I think we personally would still get a Wrangler.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I support that decision.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Robbie.
The Robbie seal of approval.
Robbie, okay. Do you give the car you were driving your seal of approval?
I do. I was driving the Acura Integra A-Spec this week. Well, not this week. Recently, I drove the 2023 Acura Integra A-Spec Tech. I got the manual transmission version. I went to Monterey Car Week with Acura. And in order to get there, because I live in the Bay Area and Monterey is really not that far away, they gave me this to drive down there and back and have a few days before and a few days after. And it is fantastic. That's what I'm going to call this car. Fantastic. I think it's I know a lot of people are like, well, you know, it's just a Civic. It's on the Civic platform. I'm like, that's fine.
That's not a bad thing.
that's completely fine. The clutch is outstanding. The transmission is outstanding. It drives well. It's very comfortable. It's fun to drive. I had the VTEC turbo four cylinder, and I love VTEC just because, I don't know, VTEC's been the thing for, gosh, 30 years, 40 years, 170 years. And Honda fans love their VTEC. 200 horsepower, 1.5 liter engine. It was fun to drive, and there's such a huge difference between comfort and sport. That I hadn't, like, I was just, you know, I got the car and I was just driving it down. And I realized I hadn't put it in sport yet, which is weird. And I put it in sport, I'm like, oh gosh. Because it was, you know, it was nice to drive in comfort. And instead of putting it in sport, you had, like, so much more power. They turned the VTEC, they just turned it on. Like, before it was sort of switched off, and they're like, here you go. Yeah, it's, you know, front wheel drive, wonderful. It's just a really, really fun car. It's really great. If you're looking to sort of upgrade your not insanely expensive performance driving, you know, this is sort of a, and you like front wheel drive vehicles, if you're not looking for a rear wheel drive or all wheel drive, this is definitely the car to get. When I was a kid and I had a Civic, I wanted an Integra, which I think everyone did. I think everyone who has a Civic now, all the 20-something, early 20-something year olds, they're looking at the Integra and they're like, oh, maybe I can get that. I know. I remember whining about the fact that it is not a coupe. They did not have a two-door. That's essentially because they're using the same platform as Honda. They would have to build an entirely new platform in order to have a two-door Integra. So, business-wise, that's just a dumb idea.
And you know, nobody would buy them anyway. I mean, few would buy them.
That's the thing.
It's not
worth it. No one's going to buy them anyway. So you just, you know what? I'm fine with four doors because you get a manual transmission. And Honda, Acura, they're still offering it. You should still buy it. You can't whine about not having manual transmissions in the market if you don't buy cars with manual transmissions.
Yeah.
You can't
it's
drive
all
around
our own
in your
fault.
You can't drive around in a CRV saying save the manual, and when it's time to buy a new car, you buy another CRV. I'm sorry. You have to buy the thing that you're whining about. If you could afford it, hopefully. I really liked it. I was sad to see it go. And that's there you go.
Okay.
If you're looking for some sort of nice, stylish front-wheel drive performance,
And it's also reasonably practical because it's a hatchback.
That was my engine. Like, throw my junk in the back.
All of your fancy DJing equipment.
I had to do because I had to leave Monterey Car Week in order to go directly to band practice. So I had two drum pads and like lyrics and microphones and all this crap in the trunk of the car. I enjoyed it. It's fun to drive. I used to spend 30 minutes talking about the transmission and how nice that is. And that's kind of a given at this point. The combined fuel economy for this thing is 30 mpg. I did a lot of freeway driving, but then once I, put in sport, it probably got less. I was getting like 29.7, I think, is what I got after a week, and that includes driving around town a lot, going back and forth, getting stuck in traffic, driving on some back roads. So definitely, up there. I wasn't babying it trying to get the 36 highway. Destination is $1,095. So a deal. The vehicle itself was $37,395 because it has the A-spec.
I just need to point out, I have you beat. My Jeep was $1,795.
Wow. Yeah, but they had a car. It has a battery and that extra that extra screen.
It's so much bigger.
That is one of the areas where Stellantis is absolutely the leader is in destination charges. I mean, they have really moved the bar for the industry on destination charges in entirely the wrong direction.
Yep.
Thanks, Jeep. Another priority.
What I did like is the vents on the Acura. They have like little joysticks that stick out.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like little gear shifts. They have these four little gear shifts in the dashboard. You can move it around. You know exactly where the air is going to go because you just point the little joystick where you want it to go. And for some reason, I really I enjoyed that.
You mean you didn't have to go down into a menu on a touchscreen guide it where you want?
It's the most. It's just don't even get me started on that. It's just. Just give us a little.
All right. Okay.
Nope. Okay. Cool.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
I had, in the time since we last talked as a group, had also had two vehicles. I had the Polestar 2 single motor. I'd previously driven the dual motor, which with its 402, 404 horsepower was really, really quick. The single motor is basically the exact same car minus the motor on the rear axle. And with just the one motor, but you still have the same battery, they crank up the juice a little bit to the motor. So you get 231 horsepower out of this, 243 foot-pounds of torque, which is, as an EV, it's, instant torque. So it actually feels like it's more than that because it's just so responsive. Not having driven them back-to-back, I'm sure that the dual motor feels significantly quicker, but this one is quite quick enough that, I don't think anybody's really going to have a complaint with this. From a dynamic standpoint, the only very slight issue I had with this car was when I was pulling out of the neighborhood and got on it, when I had the wheels turned slightly, I actually did get a little bit of torque steer, which, given the instant on torque nature, was not totally surprising, but I got a slight bit of torque steer that, I'm pretty sure I never experienced with the dual motor. But it wasn't enough. It wasn't like going back to the old Dodge Caliber SRT4, if you ever drove one of those.
I never drove one.
If you kind of just kind of squeeze the accelerator pedal a little bit, it would pull over into the next lane.
I'm coming over.
If the wheels are in a straight line, you're fine. Only when you get the wheels cranked over, as you're turning to pull out of your neighborhood or something like that, and you get on it hard, you feel just a slight tug in the steering wheel, and it's not, it's not snapping. It's just a little tug, which is fine.
A reminder.
Other than that, the rest of this car, is basically as it has been since it launched a year and a half or so ago. The design, this one is very clearly, this one and the Polestar 2, or the Polestar 1, the coupe, the plug-in hybrid coupe that they launched the brand with, very much clearly transitional vehicles for the Polestar brand as it separated itself from Volvo. And you look at it, you clearly see the Volvo design heritage in there. If you took off the star logo in the grill and put on the Iron Hammer or the Shield, Iron Shield, Volvo badge on there, it would look totally at home as a Volvo.
Is that what it's called, an Iron Shield?
I think so, yeah.
Because like Volvo had to tell me that. I'm like, well, they just like dudes. But it turns out it's iron.
Yeah.
It's an Iron Shield.
Like the little circle with the little arrow, the dude sign.
I was this many days old when I learned. Okay.
I didn't find out like too far ago, like maybe 3-4 months ago. Like, oh yeah, the iron like symbol. I'm like, oh, so it's not just dudes.
Yeah. So if you were to put the Volvo badge on the front of this thing,
okay,
you would not even think twice about it being, a modern Volvo. As we get into the next models, the Polestar 3 that's launching towards the end of the year, and what comes beyond that, they're separating the Polestar design away from Volvo a little bit more. It's still going to have the Thor's hammer lighting signature, but everything else is going to change more. As before, my only real complaint from a design perspective is just that the belt line is so high that you do feel like you're sitting very low in it.
Not me. But, I don't know what you're talking about.
Mr. Giant over there.
You remember, it's made in Sweden.
Yeah.
For Vikings.
Made for Vikings. Yes, exactly. It's a lovely car to drive. It has the big center touchscreen with the Android Automotive infotainment system on there. When you get in, you can log into your Google account, download your apps from the Play Store. So I log in, download Pocket Casts, log into my Pocket Casts account, and all of a sudden all my podcasts and what I'm listening to and what position I'm in any given episode is right there. Only issue there was the refresh rate for when it updates to when it syncs back to the server. In the version in Android Automotive, there's no option to change what the refresh rate is. So sometimes it takes a little while. So if you stop in the middle of a show, And then you go and pick it up on your phone later. If it's like, I think the refresh rate is probably a couple of hours or an hour, at least an hour before it updates the server. So it might, you might be in the wrong position in the episode. But that's a fairly minor detail. One of the complaints when the Polestar 2 did come out, and same for the Volvos that have the same basic infotainment system, although skinned slightly differently, is that it, at launch it did not have support for Apple CarPlay. That is there now. It exists. I plugged in an iPhone. You get your Apple CarPlay on the screen there. You're all good if that's your preference. It all works really well. The range for the single motor version, because it's lighter, is a little bit longer than what you get with the dual motor. So it goes from about 256 miles up to 270 miles. And I was on track to go, to be able to get well over 270 with driving it around a mix of city and highway driving. Really, really enjoyed it. I think if you're looking for something with that kind of premium Swedish feel to it, that's not overly flashy, but you want something electric with a reasonable amount of range and decent performance, the Polestar 2 single motor is a really good option. The base price on the single motor is $46,000. The one I drove had $1,200 metallic paint, plus the $4,000 plus package, which includes the Harman Kardon premium sound.
I was going to say, what does that do for $4,000?
The glass roof.
You get Disney Plus, you get
all the pluses.
Yeah. Well, you do get a heat pump climate control system, which is a little more efficient than the traditional resistive heating. You get heated rear seat, heated steering wheel, heated wiper nozzles. Also very handy.
That's very fancy and cool.
If you live in a cold climate. If you live in a warm climate, you might be able to get away without. But you do lose the glass roof in that case if you don't go with the plus package. Power driver and passenger seats with power backrests and a few other assorted options. And then the pilot package gets you the Pixel LED headlights with the light sequence, LED front fog lights, 360 surround view camera, the ADAS package with pilot assist and adaptive cruise control. For $3,200, that seems a little pricey, but it's probably worth it to get some of the ADAS stuff, even if pilot assist is still kind of iffy. All in with the $1,300 destination charge, $55,600, which, for a premium sort of compact to mid-size, sedan-shaped but hatchback functionality vehicle is good. If you're looking for something premium like that, it's worth a look. And then the other thing, I transitioned from that into the Toyota Corolla Cross. And this was the Corolla Cross XLE with all-wheel drive.
Okay.
Ooh.
And to be honest, I'd probably just go with a regular Corolla.
Toyota has an SUV now for every six,
yes.
every 3 to 4. If you need something that's 3 or 4 inches bigger, we'll make an SUV for that. So they're getting every iteration of SUV they can
build. It's the ultimate. What are those? The Matryoshka dolls? Am I saying that?
Yeah,
right? Sit inside. Dolls. There's just like they're so wedged. They're just right up. There's just so many in there. It's not like five. There's like 50 in that tiny little thing.
And to be fair, every automaker is doing that.
Yeah, they are.
This is not a Toyota phenomenon. The Corolla Cross is fine. It is a perfectly acceptable compact crossover. It's smaller than the RAV4. It's bigger than a CHR. It kind of has that RAV4 look and shape to it, which is fine. I don't mind the way it looks. My complaint about the Corolla Cross is the powertrain. It's got a 2-liter four-cylinder and a CVT. And a 2-liter four-cylinder is not necessarily a bad thing. But this one, you know, it's 169 horsepower and 150 foot-pounds of torque. And the torque peak is between 4,400 and 4,800 RPM. When you combine something that has modest torque that with a, it comes at a really high peak RPM with a CVT, it's not the most pleasant driving experience. You know, it's... And especially the way Toyota programs their CVTs, you know, where you get that motorboating effect where, okay, let's rev it up to the peak RPM or the RPM for the peak torque and just sit there as you accelerate. And, you know, so as you're pulling away from an intersection, you know, revving it at 4,000 RPM, it's like, okay.
We'll get there.
Yeah,
we'll
eventually.
Hey, where are you going? You don't need, hey, slow down, buddy.
Yeah, take it easy there, buddy.
It's a reasonably roomy vehicle, you know, for its size. It's, you know, it's perfectly acceptable amount of room. You know, the XLE all-wheel drive, and the performance is exacerbated by the fact that the XLE all-wheel drive weighs a little over 3,300 pounds curb weight. So it's not exactly a lightweight.
I forgot that it's all-wheel drive, so now I'm just like, oh, so much more.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you go with the front wheel drive, you know, it's 30 for the XLE is 3170. So you're looking at about 150 pounds more that you're hauling around for the all wheel drive. So
it's not so bad, actually.
You know, if you live somewhere where, you know, winters are modest at best, you could probably forego, you know, the cost and the weight of the all-wheel drive, and just go with front-wheel drive, and maybe the powertrain will be slightly less. Daisy's laying over here. If you
did, Daisy just look up like, "What the heck was that?"
So, you know, I mean, it's a perfectly acceptable vehicle. Now, you know, the one I had, you know, was pretty much loaded up. Had the 9-speaker JBL audio system for almost $1,500, the $1,250 moonroof, you know, and assorted other things, and it came to a grand total of $32,419.
Wow, that's a, I mean, it starts at like 22.5.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot.
Have four at that point.
When you're up into that, you know, low to mid $30,000 price range. Not sure that this is the option that I would go for.
No.
Yeah, there's, in fact, you know, at 32.4, you know, I would probably try and see if I could get, you know, a Kona EV, because it's not that much more.
Is that what you have, Robbie? Is that what you have, a Kona EV?
Yeah,
that is, right?
Yeah, Kona EV. Yeah, you can get a, that's, yeah, I think that's 34.
It's about 34.
34, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I would try and swing that. And it's going to be a much more fun vehicle to drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get the Kona.
See, that's the problem. There are other comparable choices in price that are better to drive, which is a problem.
Yeah. And I haven't driven the new HRV yet, so I can't really compare. But you've driven it.
It's really good. Yeah. And I say this as someone who did not like the old HRV. The old HRV was
just kind of slammed together. It was just like, here's a thing.
Yeah, like, don't pretend it didn't exist and just go with the new H. And actually, the new HRV I would recommend to somebody. Like, the old one, I'd be like, don't do that. Do not go there. The new one is good. It's good.
Have you driven the Kicks, the Nissan Kicks?
Yeah,
I have.
So would you recommend the Kicks over the Corolla Cross? Because the Kicks is less expensive. And it's a lot less expensive. It's also just like your first car, but it's so good. It's like there are two really great Nissans right now. One's the Z way up the top, and the other one's the Kicks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in fact, and the very bottom, they're doing great.
Just a few days ago, I was walking my dog, and I was walking with one of the neighbors. He was walking his dog, and he was saying his niece, 16-year-old niece, their parents wanted to buy her a car. And was looking for a recommendation, and I actually recommended the Kicks. I said, you know, the probably the best options for a 16-year-old, either Nissan Kicks, Hyundai Venue, or, you know, if they want to go with a sedan, the Versa,
really good too.
The Nissan Versa, you know, because you can get all of those for under $20,000, or at least nominally get them for under $20,000. You know,
I think the Kicks
is probably 20 grand markup on them.
Isn't the Kicks front wheel drive only though? I have that in my head. The Kicks is front wheel drive only. Yeah. So it's the only drawback. If you live someplace where you want all wheel drive, it's front wheel drive only.
Yeah, but I mean, for most people, even in winter conditions, front wheel drive is going to be fine.
Yeah.
We've had the tire discussion.
We have had the tire discussion.
Spend $1,000 on an extra set of wheels and tires instead of all wheel drive, and you'll be better off.
Yeah.
I would probably actually recommend the Kicks over this. For like, was it 19 grand starting price for a Kicks, something like that?
Yeah, it's cheap.
Yeah. So, and it's not as the powertrain is less annoying.
Yeah, and it does. It starts $19,990 is the MSRP. I'm on the site this very minute, but still, it's under 20 grand. $19,990.
It's 12 grand cheaper than this thing.
Yeah, and given the choice between the two, I'd take the Kicks for $12,000. If you're in that market where you're like that price point where like price is a super concern and you have a very tight budget, that's a huge amount of money. It's a huge, even if it's not, but. Especially for a young buyer, that's a gigantic amount of money.
And the headrests, which I could never figure out if they were actually working or not.
and the Kicks does not have Toyota's old Entune infotainment system.
Oh,
true that. Yeah,
The Corolla Cross does.
Oh,
yeah, it doesn't have the new Toyota infotainment. So
that's a bummer.
There's that.
The new Toyota one. What did I drive that was Toyota recently? It works.
Let's move on to some of the stuff that has happened since we last spoke.
Stuff that has happened. Okay.
Lots has happened. The first couple things on here we don't have to spend a whole lot of time on. But since you guys weren't here last week, and I had interviews last week, I talked to Tim Kaniskis, who's the head of Dodge, and I talked to Mickey Bly, who's the global head of propulsion systems for Stellantis, about Dodge's electrification strategy. And we saw while Robbie was off hobnobbing with the fancy people in Monterey, I was hanging out with people that appreciate Hellcats.
Nobody hobnobs like me. I can tell you that. And when I say nobody hobnobs like me, when she's, I'm literally like, are you going to get food? I'm like, I'm not standing in line with rich people.
So I'd love to hear your impressions of the Dodge Charger Daytona SRT concept.
Me?
Both
or
of you.
Just, okay.
You go first, Mr. I hang out with fancy pants people. You go first.
Did you wear fancy pants, by the way?
I did not. You know what? I buy pants. I go to, what is that place called? H&M? Or Uniqlo?
That's not fancy pants.
Oh, no. I am a very basic person. I was in Copenhagen, which sounds very fancy, but I had a 45-minute conversation with someone about how awesome Spam is. So,
I mean, it is awesome. This person wasn't arguing with you, were you? Were they? They
were. Oh no, we were just talking about how much we love Spam.
Okay.
While others at the table were, some of them were a little bit on board, and others were like, "What is happening?"
Spam is amazing. I was just talking about Spam last night that I need to.
So I am a tourist within the world of the fancy pants.
I get it.
So the Dodge Daytona SR, it's a lot.
Charger Daytona
Dodge,
S.
Dodge Charger Daytona SRT EV.
Whew. Looks fantastic.
With the Banshee propulsion system.
With the Banshee propulsion system.
That's the
system.
Best name. I love it.
It looks fantastic. It looks amazing. I hope they can make it corner a little better than our current cars. But
it's going to have a low center of gravity. We can count
exactly. So you're going to get that. So you get that nice little low center of gravity with that EV powertrain. They're trying to figure out how to make noise. Banshee. I'm assuming they'll just play Susie and the Banshee songs over it whenever you take off. It looks great. I think, as a person who really appreciates muscle cars but doesn't really want one, because I grew up with muscle cars and it's like, oh, it's the car my mom drove, which is a weird thing. Like, most people, my mom drove a wagon. Like, no, not my mom.
What did she drive?
We had a Challenger, a 70 something Challenger, I forget which one, and a Javelin.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Wow. And the Challenger we had for a while, and that thing was just, I think it was nuts. My dad, on the other hand, had like a station wagon when they met. this is my stepdad. So when they met, my mom had this Challenger, just boop, 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 and he had a station wagon. And then, you know, and then later they got rid of the Challenger, and they got a Javelin, and he got like a GMC three-quarter ton pickup single cab, which we drove her in all the time, the five of us with a single cab, because no one cared about seatbelts back then, except for your mom, apparently, Nicole. Because long story short, I think this is an outstanding vehicle. It looks, it just, oh my God, it's so beautiful. I mean, you say what you want about muscle cars and just loud, dumb power. They, you know, mm-hmm. when they're
and this
when
thing
they,
is loud.
When they're, yeah, when they're when they look good, they oh, they look. It's just such an American art form, to be honest. I am very excited about when this comes to market. I would love to drive one. Probably wouldn't buy one again because it's my mom's car.
It's your mom's car. How cool is he?
But as mom like cars go,
right?
But as mom's cars go, yeah, that's the weird thing is as mom's car. I'm a big fan of like the smaller rear wheel drive, like cornering. You know, the BRZs, the GR86s, the Miatas.
You can't have those as a mom car because your kids have to ride like on the roof or something.
Well, that's
you
might want. We drove a Challenger. I don't know. We just like get in the car. And they just had the seat, just the flappy seat with just an L and just flop forward. And you're like, all right, get in the back. You know, pop back. No, it's outstanding. If I get one in for review, I'll go and show it to my mom.
I am stupidly excited about this. Like, I love the, and I wanted the sound that they've created where they have a funky name, the Fratzonic Chambered Exhaust System. Mm-hmm. I think that's awesome. I want to drive it and play with it. I'm just basically going to be on the highway going zoom, 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 trying to hear what it sounds like at different, you know, how, depending on how aggressive you are on, it's not a gas pedal, the accelerator.
I love the go pedal.
I think it's fantastic that they gave it this, like, we're not going to make this, you know, really powerful vehicle, but give it the refined EV sound. It's like, oh, heck no, we're going to make it sound like a Dodge. We're going to make it sound like a muscle car. We don't care what we have to do. It's going to be noisy. I'm like, yes, bring it. I love that. I think the styling on this is killer. And I love the Banshee, like, face they've created, like, in the style of the Hellcat face.
Oh, the Banshee
face,
logo?
Yeah, the little Banshee logo. That thing's scary. Also, when you were talking about corny, it was funny. I was watching a movie last night called Day Shift. It's a stupid, goofy, corny vampire movie that's like on Netflix or something came out. Okay, but there's a scene where the bad guy vampires are chasing the good guy, and they're all in Dodge Chargers, and they're taking. I'm like, they would not be able to corner like that. Who did this movie? I could accept the vampires. I could accept everything. I'm like, now you've lost me. There's no way a Charger is cornering like that.
There was a movie a few years ago where there was like a. Clearly a car that was built to corner and then like a muscle car was keeping up with it. And I was like, no.
Yeah, exactly.
I just walked away. I was like, no.
You can accept all. It's like a car journalist thing. You can accept all sorts of stuff in a work of fiction. You're like, now you have gone too far. That car
You've
can't do that.
You've gone too far. I'm sorry.
And you know, when you hear the sound effects they add to some of these, because you know, usually what you're seeing or what you're hearing in a movie
is not what
actually happened. And, you know, the Foley work that they do with cars sometimes, you know, it's like, I know that car, and I know it doesn't sound anything like that.
They go around a corner, it sounds like this really burly engine wheel spinning. You're like, all he did was turn. It's like, where did all of that noise come from?
Was it one of the Marvel movies where they added engine noise to the Audi e-tron GT?
I think so.
No, they did. Yeah. Did they really? Yeah, I missed that.
Added engine noise to the Audi e-tron GT.
That's
I especially love old movies where they're driving on dirt and there's wheel squeal.
Yeah.
Like, and they're gone. It should be. Yeah. But it's
They're like, well, nothing to squeal.
In the famous chase scene in Bullet, you know, I think somebody counted up how many times hubcaps fell off.
Oh, they fell off.
there was like, I think 11 hubcaps that came off the Mustang or the Charger during the course. Yeah, it was on the Charger that was chasing it. The bad guys chasing Steve McQueen. 11 different hubcaps fell off, you know, from four wheels.
As happens, you know, there's just it's a much
they automatically
caps.
Regenerate.
They're all just there. You lose one, there's another one right behind it. You lose that one, there's another one.
It's like shark's teeth. Sharks have rows of teeth. You know,
there's an extra one, another one pops out. They know how you're going to drive. They've got extras just there, just in case.
Like Pez.
Pez.
Take one candy. Oh, no, there's another one.
Okay, because I wanted to get your thoughts, because there's been some controversy about how loud the exhaust system and the fact that they're even doing an exhaust system on this.
So what is the controversy you're seeing? It's too loud and they shouldn't do it. Is that the general idea?
Pretty much, yeah.
Then I'm gonna see those people.
It's 126 decibels, which is the same as a Hellcat.
Those people are stupid. If you don't,
126 decibels, that's way too loud.
No, it is not. There's no such thing as a too loud car.
No,
I think Tim Kaniskis would agree that you need a burly grr engine. exhaust.
As someone who's on stage a lot and has to listen to a lot of loud stuff, all I get, I'm like, oh my God.
But that's not a car. If I'm buying a muscle car that has that angry little rar, no, not a rar. I don't know. What sound does a banshee make?
Banshee. No, it's something completely different.
Screams. No, I'm thinking like the animal, the banshee, like a banshees are like a mythical animal.
It's a scream.
They scream, right? They scream. Yeah. If you got a banshee on the side of your car and you got a fancy Fratzog chambered exhaust system, you want it to sound like it looks. Be noisy and aggressive and wake up the neighbors at 4 a.m.
It can be aggressive and not noisy.
What wouldn't surprise me is if they end up, since this is all software controlled, using some geofencing to limit where, how loud it gets. So maybe in residential neighborhoods, you may be limited to 60 or 70 decibels.
It could have a button, just like, a lot of sports cars, you have the sport exhaust, and you just push a button and it's quiet. Like, you could just have a button, you push it so you don't actually wake up.
Yeah, Mustang's got quiet mode.
Right. I'm not actually a proponent of, waking up your neighbors. I try not to, so.
Nicole hates her neighbors. That's what we
I try
today.
To be very quiet when I creep out of the driveway for a flight at 4 o'clock in the morning. I feel bad when I have a loud car. I'm like, sorry, everybody.
Blasting her banshees.
Yeah, the banshee. Whee! Oh, Nicole's going to the airport.
It's 800 volts. That's all I care about.
Yeah.
That's fast charging.
Hopefully.
We'll see.
I mean, depends on
depending
the charger.
Depending on where you find the charger.
Potential.
Yesterday I was trying to charge a Lucid Air from a 350 kilowatt charger and only got it up to about 180.
Oof.
Yeah.
Boo, Ernst.
Really?
Yeah.
Was this like at a public charger somewhere?
It was an EA station in Santa Barbara.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Santa Barbara.
That's not good. That's a problem.
And that was the second charger. The first one didn't
work.
Do anything at all. So there's that again.
There's that.
Thanks,
again.
Electrify America.
That just keeps coming back. Everyone's complaining about it, and rightly so.
But they did put out a press release last week saying that they're going to do better.
All right. Well, do better.
I promise they're going to do better.
Talk is pointless. I want to see the charging stations working.
At least they're acknowledging. That's the first step.
Yeah. I guess.
Acknowledge you've got a problem.
He had the chance to rent a Tesla a couple of weeks ago at a Hertz thing, and he debated. He's like, oh, maybe I'll rent a Tesla just to drive an EV to have some. And then he suddenly looked. He's like, wait, I'm out of town. I don't know where I am. I have to find charging stations. If it doesn't charge, I have to do a good bit of driving. I actually need the range on it. He's like, no, and I've seen the problems we've had with chargers trying to use it on a plug-in where it's not a big deal if he can. He's like, what if I get myself stuck in the middle of nowhere outside Chicago? And I can't get a charging station. I'm sitting here for 8 hours. He's like, I can't do that. I got work to do. He didn't do it simply because of the charging network. Otherwise, he'd have been all in.
That's the thing, is that the Tesla's the one car you couldn't get.
Yeah, they're the most reliable.
Right, but he was still nervous about it. He's like, I don't know where they are. I don't know what's going to happen. And what if the charging network isn't where it needs to be in the middle of nowhere places I'm going? Nope, not going to do it. And it was with Tesla, which was the reliable one. So,
all right. Monterey, Robbie, you were there.
You were
hanging out with Acura.
I was hanging out with Acura.
Tell us about the Precision EV concept.
The Precision EV concept, it looks really nice. It sort of looks, I wanted to say the prelude, the prologue. but it, it has that Acura design, design language that we've seen over the last few years on the SUVs. So it's right in line with what you'd expect from the automaker. It looks really nice. Acura is of the two, of the Acura Honda Voltron, I don't know what you want to call it. Acura is going to be the first to go EV. Honda is going to do hybrids for a long time and then go EV. So Acura is going to be EV while Honda goes a hybrid. And so I think this was a good sort of coming out for them. Showing that the first ones are going to be based on the GM Ultium platform, and then they'll have their, I think it's called e-architecture. I probably should look that up. Yeah. That's a pretty easy name. And you know what? Good. I didn't have to look that up. I'm like, what is it? E-architecture? Yeah. Okay, cool. No, yeah, they sure. have the E-arch. It's like super handling all-wheel drive. Honda's like, this is what it is. This is what we're going to call it. We're going to call it exactly what it is. E-architecture. Yep.
No fancy names.
No, just what is it? Yeah, call it that. So E-architecture, it'll be interesting to see what's coming next. I'm very excited about the potential for an Integra EV. I couldn't get anyone to say they're going to make an Integra EV, but they're going to make an Integra EV. That's coming. I feel like I've said it way too much, but it's a marathon, not a sprint. Mm-hmm. Even with regulatory, 2035, which we've known for like 2 years anyway. I think everyone's like, oh my God. I'm like, we knew about this 2 years ago. Plus, what's going on with Europe with the exact same time frame. I think Acura especially should be fine. Honda will be fine because they're just going to take everything they learned from Acura. It's their performance brand. It's their performance luxury brand. And if you can that's what everyone's been doing. They've been electrifying their top end of their lineup and then moving that down. Mercedes has done it. Porsche, everything's the top end, to be honest. but I think, they're coming to market like, Volkswagen did with an SUV first, because that's what people want. So we're probably gonna get a couple more SUVs. Then we'll get some nice sedans. And then we'll get probably an electric CR-V first from Honda.
Okay, I have to say I'm reading the press release, and you're talking about names, and let's just call it E-architecture because that's easy. They're talking about the next generation of Acura HMI with an intuitive and easy-to-use hyperwide curved transparent display and haptic touchscreen. And then it says Particle Glitch boot up graphics. Particle Glitch. I feel like that's a name. I don't want anything in my car named Glitch.
Glitch. Yeah. Yeah.
Especially glitch.
Given, modern software defined vehicles. You don't want glitches.
It's literally,
well, they
in
call
quotes,
the front particle glitches as well. The fascia is the particle glitch design. You're like,
I feel like that's a poor marketing choice. It's like,
it's bad. They should have just called it the startup screen.
Yeah, just the start of that. If you had a car company, what is this? It's called car.
It's called the car.
Well, speaking of poor marketing choices, about 12 hours after they unveiled the Precision EV concept, they put out another press release announcing that their 2024 EV, that is going to be built on the GM Ultium platform, it's going to be called the ZDX.
It's zero emissions DX. Remember the ZDX?
I remember the ZDX. I drove the ZDX. I reviewed it for Autoblog back in 2010.
Huh.
It wasn't a good car.
Why?
Exactly.
I think it's like the Ford Maverick. They're like, well, we have the DX. Well, I'll just say it, the ZDX. Maybe everyone will forget.
They brought back a name for the Integra. They went from ILX back to Integra. Why not give it a name?
Give it a name. Why did we give it?
They spent all their money on Particle Glitch. That's what we found out.
There's other news. Yeah. What's the other one? Someone else is doing...
I'm calling it the Legend.
The ZDX, the Cross Tour. Remember those? Remember?
Yeah,
you should, because they weren't good.
No.
There's a Cross Tour in my neighborhood somewhere, and every time I see it, I'm like, ooh. I like sort of wince. I'm like, ooh, that was a bad...
I actually didn't mind driving the ZDX. The ZDX was actually pretty cool to drive.
It was just weird.
It was just a little weird to look at.
Yeah, that's the problem.
So there's these weirdness. So I accidentally typed in the show notes that Lexus has the TX coming, and I'm like, the Lexus Texas? Come on. Come on. Like, does nobody, like, that's all I can, this is going to be the Lexus Texas.
Does anybody not say these things out loud?
I mean, I'm like, Lexus, TX, Texas. It's not like, what's that tiny little state? No, what's the gigantic state that, like, Lexus Texas? Okay.
Well, I mean, Toyota is based in Texas now.
Texas.
I guess the Lexus Texas. I mean, tell me that's not what you see when you see Lexus TX. You think Lexus Texas.
Yeah.
I talked to the CEO of Polestar while I was at Monterey, and we were talking about names. I'm like, okay, so you have the Polestar 1, the Polestar 2, the Polestar 3, the Polestar 4. I'm like, are you going to go with names? Because Volvo's going with names. And his reply was like, he's like, I've been in too many meetings where people trying to come up with names. and then you come up with a name, and it turns out someone else owns it. It was sort of like, the overall thing was, names are a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
He didn't say that, but he's like, they're just a pain in the ass. He's like, I can just call this the Polestar 4 or the Polestar 5, you know.
Or 6.
Or I can call this the Polestar 2 sedan or the Polestar 3 SUV. He's like, I can just say that.
At some point, yeah, you got to give a name. I think names are better. I
so at some point, we're
going to
the Polestar 34.
Polestar 942.5. I don't know. When do we stop?
Well, I do agree that I prefer names because they tend to be more memorable. But there's also, you know, the challenge of
Lexus Texas.
They
should have just called it
that. The fact that, you know, sometimes a name may have a different meaning in a different language.
This is
which
true.
Chevy may Nova. Not necessarily be desirable.
This is true.
Chevy Nova, which is the Chevy No Go in Spanish.
Yeah. That's right.
Or the Buick LaCrosse, which meant something different in Quebec, in Canada.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It had a less than desirable connotation. And there's been many others over the years.
Numbers, though. Oh, did you just look it up? Oh.
Well, I did.
We'll leave that as a job as a task for the listener to.
Oh my gosh!
She's on your Google homework today.
I know. And now, what the heck am I going to get for like my search engine stuff? Now after looking that up,
good job.
Go, yeah, good job.
You gotta do private search for that stuff.
All right, moving on from the Acura ZDX. Did you go see the Lincoln L100?
I did. I got to sit in it and everything.
And?
It's huge.
Yeah. I sat in the foam buck in the studio and saw the clay model. I didn't. They were still working on the one that they shipped out to California.
It is because so many companies are trying to make sure that their concept vehicle becomes an actual vehicle at some point. Lincoln's like, nah. We're going to make this giant Batman the Animated Series vehicle. You're going to sit in it. It's going to have a screen on the ground. It's going to have a little car, a little chess piece, they call it. Mm-hmm. A car that you can turn around. It's going to have 14-foot wide doors. The doors are 14 feet wide. Just because the open
as long as the Polestar 2, I think.
Yeah.
Pretty close.
And the roof pops up. And
the pop-up roof is the freakiest thing. The way this opens, it looks like something. It makes me think of like a spaceship from a movie.
Yeah.
Like when you're like, that spaceship doesn't look scary. Whoa. Oh my God, here comes a tractor beam. Like the way it opens up is freaky.
Or it's like watching the giant squid in 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea coming at you.
Right. Like now it's coming for you. You're doomed.
It's welcoming you.
Oh, is that what it's doing?
Yeah.
Okay. I actually like it. I think it's kind of cool to have a concept car.
It's
clearly
cool.
A concept car. But all that, like the practicality of it. No, your roof your roof would hit the top of every garage you were ever in. Your doors would hit everything in sight. It would never work out, but it's snazzy for a concept.
It is very snazzy. I really liked it. It's completely impractical. The wheel covers are like 3 centimeters off the, not even that, like half a centimeter off the ground.
Oh, jeez.
The wheels that would actually go inside and the wheel covers on the outside to reduce turbulence and to look cool. So it kind of looks like a Tron car.
Mm-hmm.
It does have a Tron vibe.
Well, and
that
animated floor, when I was in the studio getting a walk around with the designers, I asked them about that because I don't think you were. I think you were both at the LA Auto Show last November. Mm-hmm. Did you go to the Subaru stand?
Yes. Oh, is it like the floor?
They had the animated floor there. And if you were standing on this animated floor waiting for the press conference to start and you looked down, it was like a grassy field or something.
And then it was
extremely disorienting.
And it changed. If you were just standing in their booth after the fact, when it changed, you'd walked in and it looked like fake dirt. And then all of a sudden it changes to snow and your brain does this like, whoa, where are my feet? Like,
exactly.
So for this floor, because you're actually not seeing that much of it, whereas in the Subaru booth, it's just all encompassing. Mm-hmm. It's not as bad.
Okay.
It's not as disorientating as the floor at the Subaru booth.
Well, and the thing that they told me was,
because you really kind of have to look down, and then when you look down, it's like it's sort of like out of focus because you're only seeing this one thing as opposed to this big giant. It's like moving your face really close up to a picture. It's kind of like that, and
you're
sort of flying over things. I don't know. I think though, if you were driving and that was happening, that's a bad scene.
Yeah. Well, I asked them about that, and they said that, yeah, they had seen that Subaru booth at the show. And
we can make a car with that.
They thought about that. Well, no, they said, you know, and they had already been working on this anyway. But they took that into consideration. They actually slowed down the animation because that was one of the things they studied that, you know, because that was moving a little bit too fast, the way the Subaru did it. And so they slow it down. So it's actually, a very slow moving animation. It's supposed to give the impression of flying over the clouds.
Yeah. Like there's sand dunes and then clouds and then something purple, which I made the joke that we're flying over Prince's house. but no, I like a big, ridiculous concept car that looks cool. And that's exactly what it was. And it was fun watching them having to open and close because they had to remove the back part of it and do all this stuff. And I had to shoot video of it before they did the unveiling. And the area was so tight, and I was just like, "Ah!" And I shot a bunch of video. And so this is just a little side note. As a professional, I shot 5 stand-ups without the audio turned on. So there are now 5 stand-ups saved on my computer of me with just dead silence. I'm just a mime. I got to put I had to put intercards in between it, like an old 20s movie, and put some piano.
You just have to do some ADR.
Yeah.
Remember what you said and re-record the audio. And
yeah, so I had to redo it. Once I realized what I did, I did it all again because I'm a professional.
You had to do all of it again? Oh, my God.
Yeah, do it all. I missed one, though, so I ended up having to do voiceover for one of them. I thought I covered them all, but I missed one. So
anyway, all right.
Cars are stressful.
Stressful, yes.
Any other highlights you saw in Monterey that...
The Myers Manx, rhymes with Spanx. Looks outstanding. The EV version. I went over. I talked to him. I told him how much how sad I was that the Volkswagen wasn't going to do it. I actually prefer this one. I think the other one, if it's smaller, you're not going to get you can get one without a lot of range, which is totally fine. The idea of driving around in a Myers Manx, it's an EV in town. Sounds outstanding. You can solve crimes. You can be in a wacky race of some sort.
I want to solve crimes.
Anything you want to do with a dune buggy, you can do with this within your neighborhood. I don't know how well it would do in Boston in the winter or in Michigan, but here in my neck of woods,
outstanding. Just to bundle up, you know, wear extra layers.
Yeah, just throw some extra. I mean, you have a convertible. You're driven around in the cold with the top down because it's a convertible.
Only down to 40 degrees.
See, that's perfect.
Yeah.
You're good. There you go. Myers Manx. Rhymes with Spanx.
The Manx.
Just remember that. It's because the people, Manx, Mink. It's like Ticon. I'm like, like you're wearing a tie and you're William Shatner and you're yelling Con.
Ticon.
Con!
Nicely done.
I had not thought of it in those terms, but okay.
There you go. William Shatner wearing a tie, yelling Con.
Oh my gosh, now that's in my head, and I'm not really complaining about
that.
You'll
never forget. You'll never forget.
That'll work.
Manx rides a Spanx, Ticon, Shatner wearing a tie. You're welcome. You're welcome, listeners.
Okay, so now we all know how to pronounce Ticon. okay, next, touchscreens. Touchscreens are bad. So say the Swedes.
So say so say we all.
Yeah. So there was a study recently done in Sweden of they used a bunch of modern vehicles and they ran through a series of tasks. They did a 2005 Volvo V70, MG Marvel R, BMW iX, Seat Leon, Dacia Sandero, Volvo C40. And also a Tesla Model 3 and a few others that have varying degrees of user interface with touchscreens and physical controls. And they had four tasks that they had to do while they were driving, and they measured the amount of time it took to complete the four tasks. The BMW iX... the MG Marvel R was the worst. It took 44.9 seconds of looking away from the road to do these tasks. The BMW iX, 30.4 seconds. And the 2005 Volvo only took 10 seconds. And even the new C40, the current C40 only took 13.7 seconds. What do you think?
That makes sense to me. After
it does.
Having driven lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of cars, I am still a huge fan of actual physical things that I can touch and feel and have muscle memory and not have to, like, steady my hand.
Just a button for things. Just a normal button would be nice. I don't want to have to dig into your infotainment to turn up the heat or turn down the heat or... I mean, I want it to be a display for things. Like, in my ultimate world, it would be the display for things, but everybody else would be a nice, easy-to-use button that didn't require stupid dials or stupid touchpads. Just give me some buttons to do the things I need to do.
Yeah. Yep. Thank you. I agree. Yeah. And you know, those buttons and dials, they never freeze up. They never lock up.
Nope.
They don't need rebooting.
I can turn the heat up and down with my hand. I can turn the audio up, down.
And you know where it is? And you learn where it is. Once you get used to it in your car, you don't have to look. You're like, volume there, whatever. You just it takes 2 seconds as opposed to, like, people will say, oh, but then your hands are off the wheel. And yeah, otherwise my hand and my eyes are off the wheel because I'm trying to off the road because I'm trying to find where it is in the touchscreen, you know?
Yep.
Well, and this was the other thing that they also measured in addition to the time. They looked at the angle down that the driver had to look to actually do these tasks.
Away. Yeah.
Yeah. And in that MG, which is not the classic MG, but this is, MG, the MG brand is now owned by SAIC in China. That MG, the driver had to lower their line of sight by 56 degrees to see the bottom edge of the screen.
56 degrees. That's pretty significant.
That's where all their stuff's usually hanging out.
The Mercedes GLB was only 20 degrees. So
it's up.
Yeah. And this is up, basically up, closer to your line of sight when you're watching the road. And this is part of the reason why so many modern vehicles have the screen mounted, kind of like a tablet up on top of the dashboard instead of being down in the center stack, so that, you're even when you do look at the screen, you can still see the road in your peripheral vision. So it's a much safer solution.
I've gotten used to my car and I've gotten used to my touchscreen. I'm like, well, that's great, but it's still taking you three taps to do something that should just be a twist or a flick. Or a flick. That's all.
That's the only acceptable motions.
Twist and flicks.
Twists and flicks. Okay.
Twist, flicks, and taps. Presses? I don't know.
All right. Then there was an article in TechCrunch by some guy named Roberto Baldwin.
He doesn't know much. No,
about
sorry.
Lamborghini.
He's a dirty hack.
Yeah. So what did Lamborghini have to say?
So I spoke with Lamborghini's brand new CTO, Mr. Moore. I used to speak with Maurizio pretty often. He was the former CTO. And the new CTO, they're sort of still moving along at the same pace when it comes to electrification and talking about what they're going to do. What was interesting is that, and the reality is that Lamborghini, years ago, you could just be like, oh, our 0-60 is, 4 seconds. It's 3.5 seconds. It's 4.5 seconds. And everyone would be like, ooh, well, there's a Kia now. That's 0-60 in 3.6 seconds. A Kia.
Because not that there's anything wrong with Kias.
No. And the EV6 GT.
Just unexpected.
Yeah, the EV6 GT, I'm very excited to drive that. But it's not a Lamborghini. And so how does Lamborghini sort of, how do you go from this performance brand that, for years, like, we have these giant engines that we've stuck in these machines and they're going to go really fast. And so they've realized that you can't really compete on just going from 0-60 because you hit an upper limit when it comes to what people can actually enjoy. I think there's more than a few people that I've done launch control in an EV and they're like, I don't like that. Don't do that again. Because it's sort of exhilarating when you're the driver, but it's also sort of fleeting. Because you did it three times, you're like, well, I'm never going to do this again.
Right.
You think you're going to, but you're only going to do it when you a family member comes over or a friend. So how do you, so Lamborghini has realized that that's not going to win them people. Like, just that arms race is essentially over. Everyone's going to have, you know, these 2 second, these 2.5 second 0 to 60 times. So that's, it's done. Let's not, like, so they're looking at drivability essentially. And I believe during our conversation, we actually talked about the Miata, the drivability of the vehicle, and also the, what you're getting from Lamborghini as an automaker. And so when people get out of the vehicle, it's more important that they've had a good time as opposed to just going, you know, in a straight line very quickly, which is, mm-hmm. you know, it's refreshing and it's smart. And if you're, you know, at this point, if you're only going for that 0 to 60 time, you're the competition. It's everyone's just going to hit the upper limit and that's it. I mean, literally everyone. You can say, well, yeah. The Tesla Plaid will do it in 2 seconds. So will the Lucid, and so will probably Kia in 6 months.
Yeah.
It's just everyone can go that fast. It's just that they don't. That's
right. It's more about the overall experience. And you know, Tim Kaniskas told me the same thing, that, you know, we're not, you know, with our EVs, the Dodge EVs, we're not necessarily going for being the absolute fastest. At least not with, you know, with the road cars. You know, it's more about the overall experience of driving this vehicle. You know, and I'll be curious to see, you know, I mean, obviously with Dodge, you know, it's about the noise and the shift points because they've got a multi-point transmission. I'll be curious to see what Lamborghini is going to do. Did he give you any hints about, you know, specifically what kinds of things that they would do differently to set Lamborghini apart from other brands?
Well, they have their LDVI system, which I've tested before in, I believe, a Huracan at Willow Springs. What happened was is that I went to Willow Springs. The Huracan is not a very big vehicle to begin with. I stuck a helmet on, and that's me with my head cocked at like a 45-degree angle. I'm just kind of crammed in there like a sardine in a tiny little can trying to drive this vehicle. And the idea was the LDVI system helps correct your bad driving. And because I was sitting at the weirdest position possible, I could actually feel it like correcting like bad lines, like as I was starting to like slip a little bit. And so they talked about making that, it better and upgrading it for an electrified system because they have so much more control with torque vectoring. And so they're, you know, he's talking about how we're going to, you know, adjust differentials and adjust torque vectoring. So the driving experience is a lot nicer. And he's like, we want to go beyond what everyone else is doing. And you know, he gave props to Porsche and to Audi, which of course are both part of the Volkswagen group, which Lamborghini is part of. But the reality is both of those vehicles actually drive really well because of all the engineering that Porsche has done on what Audi have done with those vehicles. And so Lamborghini wants to go to the next level because they have to deliver that supercar sort of drivability in a world where supercars aren't the fastest vehicles anymore. Or they're just on par with, again, a Kia.
Yeah. Well, the supercar, the idea of the supercar is like everything's kind of a supercar when you get down to it with the power they can do. So yeah.
So it's a lot. It's going to be a lot about design, and they're going to do some, you know, he's like, well, I can't tell you what's going to happen in 5 years, which is something, you know, I talked to the CEO of Lamborghini 6 months ago, and it was the same thing. He's like, we don't know what we don't know. They're thinking about sound. You know, they don't want to have an artificial sound. They're trying to figure out how to do a sound that ties in with the EV powertrain. It's super interesting what Lamborghini is thinking about for the future because, you know, for years, Ferrari was sort of like, that's the one everyone was getting. And then Lamborghini sort of came out of nowhere and was like, look at these vehicles. And, it, you know, it helped that they were purchased by the Volkswagen group. So they have all, you know, they got some investment and kind of allowed them to be Lamborghini, which is what's, you know, which Geely allowed Volvo to do. And so I'm curious to see what's going to happen in the next few years from Lamborghini as they start moving forward into electrification. And they seem, you know, CEO, CTO, the whole team seemed pretty excited about what they can accomplish. So we'll see. I'll see what happens.
Okay. Since the whole world seems to be going for electric vehicles, last couple of items we've got. As you mentioned earlier, Robbie, you know, state of California has been talking for a couple of years now, at least, about eventually banning sales of new internal combustion vehicles in the state. And Air Resources Board made that official, I think on Thursday, 2035 is the end date for new ICEs. You'll still be able to buy and sell used ICEs for the foreseeable future. And it's going to still going to be a lot of those around. It's going to take a long time for all those to be retired and replaced. But no more new ones. And I guess the state of Washington quickly followed and passed their own similar rule. So it's at least two states now. And I think most of the other dozen or so states that follow the California ZEV mandates, the zero emission vehicle mandates, have also indicated that they're going to go down the same path of banning new internal combustion vehicles after 2035. But even before that, the Bank Australia, a big major bank down under, announced that it will no longer provide financing for gasoline vehicles starting in 2025. So if you want to buy a non-EV in 2025 in Australia, you'll have to find a different bank to get you a loan for that thing. Any thoughts?
I mean, I live in California. I've dealt with CARB my entire life. We have a lot of cars. I remember how horrible the smog was in the LA area and in, you know, most of the cities. The smog is still not great. And I think, you know, it's a car-centric culture here in California. Even, you know, when I moved to San Francisco, one of the things when I was talking to the college was like, don't bring your car. And I'm like, and I ended up not driving my car for like 18 months while I was here. Well, when I first moved to San Francisco, I lived in the city. I worked in the city. I went to school in the city. There was literally no reason for me to drive a car. That said, the rest of the state is not San Francisco. And so we're very car-centric. And so because of that, and because we don't like breathing, you know, trash, you know, California as a state has been sort of like at the forefront of emissions. And, you know, this is expected. 2 years ago, there was an executive order signed by Gavin Newsom. We have 12 years to get this right. You know, 12 years ago, we didn't have a Model S. So between, you know, we had a Leaf. The Leaf was introduced 12 years ago, and this is how, you know, how far we've come in that time. So we still got another 12 years and everything.
We still have the Leaf,
but we also have a lot more, you know, money going into the entire system. And I figure in 12 years, one or two of the gas station, you know, the Exxons of the world are going to figure out, oh, you know what, let's throw a couple charging stations. Let's throw a little bit of this. Let's do that. So I think there's going to be a lot of change both in the EV world, but also in the infrastructure world. Because I think at some point everyone's like, you know what, we can beat Electrify America and we can make money on this. We can do this. We can do that. And more vehicle to load will be coming on, which will be helpful for, you know, California when it comes to the fact that PG&E keeps lighting our state on fire. If you can power your own house instead of having stuff coming over the transmission lines and starting a fire, that's going to be great. So it's... You know, it's inevitability. Gas engines had a pretty sweet run. and then, you know,
135 years.
And they're not going
anywhere.
I think there are people who think that it's going to be a, like, oh no, in 2035, someone's going to come and take my car. No. There's still going to be millions and millions and millions of gas cars on the road for decades because they're so well made now.
Yeah, there's 290 million registered vehicles in the United States. 289 million of those run on either gasoline or diesel.
Yeah, they're not going anywhere. You know, it's going to be a long time. I wrote about this for LifeWire, and I said, remember when we all sort of made fun of people who had cell phones? And they're like, oh, look at that guy with this. He can't even leave his house. He's got to be connected all the time. Hey, guess what we all have now? Cell phone.
Yeah, I'll have a cell phone.
I think a lot of people are like, oh my god, look at this person with their EV, look at this, and within 10 years they're going to be like, oh, I have an EV, and they're going to kind of forget about the fact that they used to make fun of EVs. I think it's the same thing that happened with cell phones is going to happen with EVs, where people are like, I can't even believe you would have an EV, and they're going to buy an EV and they're going to be like, oh man, it's going to be like them.
Kind of cool.
This is kind of cool. Like all the iPhone people are like, oh my god, this is so much better than. Oh, I can do all these things. And, you know, they're going to get an EV. I'm like, oh, my God, I have all this torque. I can do all these things with this vehicle. It's yeah. I, you know, I, I'm I know there are people who are angry, but I think overall no one should be concerned about what's happening.
What about New Hampshire?
What, as far as EVs? I mean, we just don't have a huge, we still have a really terrible charging infrastructure in New Hampshire. And, I see more and more of them on the road. You know, there's a couple, I've seen a Rivian or two. There's a Tesla that I think is actually in our neighborhood because I keep seeing the guy all the time. We seem to drive out of the neighborhood all the time together. I feel like it's becoming more accepted. But, you know, once as the laws change and knowing that the laws are changing, then, 2035 is a long ways away. You know, it's the future's ahead. This isn't happening tomorrow. It's not tomorrow that you can't buy a gas vehicle in places. You know, it's like you're okay. And it's not like as soon as they stop selling, and like you said, every gas station is just like, well, closing up shop. We're done today. Like,
we're shutting her down.
We're shutting her down, boys. Shut it all down.
They got a big lever that just pushed off.
Right, like in Star Wars. No, it's not going to happen that way. You know, it's not like turning off the Death Star. It's not like that. So it's going to be, it's going to take time for it to happen. And I think, if you look at how much, when's 2035? How many years is that? Do you math? 13 years. Look at 13
years. I just jumped to December and say 12.
Okay, so let's say 12. So look 12 years backwards from now in 2010. If you asked was anybody even looking at plug-in hybrids? Was anybody, hybrids were weird.
Yeah, I mean, 2010, we had the original Volt,
right?
The Leaf, and the Mitsubishi iMiEV.
And you look at how weird people are like, oh my God, they're making electric cars now. These things are weird. This is strange, strange, scary technology.
At a range of 10 feet.
Right, and you look at how much the public attitude has changed, though, in that time frame. How much our attitude towards these vehicles had changed, and our understanding, just the public. Put another 12 years on that. It's going to be okay.
The fact that the Monterey Car Week is, a lot of the news that came out of it was EVs. And, I needed to do some pickup video, some pickup B-roll of the Lucid Air, the Sapphire. And I kept walking by and hanging out and talking to them, waiting for people to move out of the way.
And they weren't. Yeah.
So I could take video of the Lucid Air. And, it was, and of course, that's a $250,000 car.
Right.
But
I think, I think it's going from being like, these are weird, stupid little cars that nobody wants, as a perception. I don't mean that was perception.
Exactly. That is
from
perception.
That, nobody wants these stupid, weird little cars they only drive in California. I say that as someone from New Hampshire. Nobody wants these here. To oh, that's kind of cool. Okay, that's interesting. Oh, that's different.
And you got brands like Lamborghini and Dodge.
Right?
They're talking about how they're going to go electric.
Exactly. So when you stop just having this idea that everyone thinks it's just a stupid little car no one wants and only hippies in California drive, to, hey, this is really kind of cool. This is a neat car. This is beautiful and luxurious. And oh my gosh, have you ever driven an EV? Suddenly this perception changes. The scariness of saying goodbye to your gas car gets much less. So, and you have plenty of time to get your head wrapped around the idea of you know what? Maybe. And by then, the chances that you don't know at least one or two people who have purchased an EV and who like it, and you've gotten to sit in one and experience it, most people will have by then, even if they don't own one. So it makes the whole switch a little bit easier to more palatable.
Yeah. Plus, I think a lot of people are going to, it's going to be their second car when for a while. And as soon as they get it, it's going to end up being the first car.
I think that's what happens.
It's the second car, and then it just sort of switches. Well, I can get one for my second car. And then the other gas car is like, well, I need to go 700 miles, and I don't want to deal with, planning. So I'm not taking the gas car.
And once you have it as the second car and you get used to it, and the sort of weird who moved my cheese situation of plugging in your car instead of fueling up your car becomes normal. It no longer feels weird to plug in a car. No longer feels scary to try to find charging stations, and you get more comfortable with the process. Suddenly, when it's your only car, it's not so scary.
Yeah. No, it's
yeah, I think, what's going to be the big challenge, and you mentioned infrastructure, Nicole, in New Hampshire. I mean, even in California, you drive around San Francisco. Yeah, San Francisco is a city where a lot of people have to park on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Those consumers, they're the ones that we have to get the infrastructure really sorted out for them, because they, somehow they're going to need to have a convenient way to charge in order to go electric.
Absolutely.
Whether that is enabling chargers in utility poles, installing bollards along the the curbs, you know, or, you know, where parking meters are, you know, just put chargers right there, you know, hook up a charger at parking meters, things like that, to make it more convenient for them, as well as having DC fast charging in the places where they go on a semi-regular basis. So, you know, when they go grocery shopping or whatever it might be, you know, assuming that anybody still goes to an actual physical grocery store in 2035 instead of just having a little delivery bot bring it to them. Those are the kinds of things that are going to need to be sorted out. And we've got time. And, you know, with the infrastructure bill that was passed earlier this year, you got $7.5 billion to build out more public chargers. And, you know, the goal there is really to put them into a significant proportion of those into underserved areas. You know, whether that's rural areas, or, you know, places where, you know, as I said, people have to rely on street parking or whatever it might be.
It's funny because they're like, oh, how are we going to get these on the street? I mean, go to Norway or Germany or a lot of, like, you just on the street, they just have charging things where you park your car because there's just apartment buildings. There's just charging things. And it's BYO cable.
It can be done.
Yeah, it's bring your own cable. So no matter what, like, weird thing you have, like, you just plug it in, you plug it in your car and you just wander off.
I can remember a couple years back, we were in Norway and I drove the car that we had rented up this, like, twisty, turny road to this fancy restaurant that Russ heard was amazing at the very top of a mountain. There's nothing there. It's like this little restaurant and a bunch of goats running around in a field outside the restaurant, charging station. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. So if they can get, like, charging infrastructure at the top of a mountain in Norway with a bunch of goats, I feel like we can figure this out by 2035.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get our act together, people.
Yeah.
Got to get our act together.
On that note, since we had a lot of stuff to catch up on this week, we're not going to do any questions this week, but we'll be back with some next week. And, you know, if you got questions, you can always send them to us on Twitter. You can shoot us an email at feedback@wheelbearings.media. Use the link on the website, whatever you want to do. And thank you for listening. And we'll talk to you next time.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Spring is here, making it the perfect time for outdoor projects. Suncast storage sheds are an excellent solution for protecting outdoor lawn and gardening tools. They're easy to assemble, and the all-weather construction provides water resistance and UV protection. Save big on Suncast storage sheds. View our selection of Suncast products today in-store and on Menards.com. Save big.